This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 40, The Edge of Awkwardness. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about spin bowling, how you encourage spinners to keep going in a world of fast and medium pace bowling. We also find out about what it takes to make improvements, and we get a revelation from Mark Garraway about a very special step that he has. Listen in to find out more on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, no matter who you are, no matter where you are in the world. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And joining me on the show are two cricket coaches whose mission it is to help others. The first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Hello, how are you? All right?
Not bad. We had all kinds of headphone fun before the start of the show, didn't we?
We certainly did, yeah. Always adds a bit of spice to any podcast, that, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you've ended up with a new set of headphones that you own. So,
yeah, that's
bonus.
Right, yeah. Got my name on it.
And secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. How's the weather up there in Glasgow? Because I've got glorious sunshine down here.
Do you know what? Since the season ended, we've barely had a drop of rain. It's another beautiful morning.
It's minus 12, but it's another beautiful morning.
Ah, well, get on with it, Gareth, isn't it?
Correct. Get on with it.
Yeah, I'm trying to... We're doing some winter training at the moment, but the problem is guys can't get there till after work and it's already dark. So we can't do anything outside at all. Even though the weather's fine, it's warmer now than it was in April, that's for sure. So let's talk about spin bowlers. That's one of the subjects that I wanted to cover this week. Because, of course, England have had a leg spinner make a test debut. And so I was thinking about developing spinners and how that's a difficult thing to do, as proven by England not being able to produce many. And in fact, there not being many really good leg spinners around throughout the history of the game, really. It's taken a long time for an English leg spinner to emerge, that's for sure. So from your own particular point of view, what would you say the challenges were of getting a talented young player to get through and keep bowling spin with passion?
Well, it's a really good question. Obviously, one that's topical, not just in our country, as you say, David, but all over the world. And I think one of the challenges that cricket is now faced with, and with professionalism and pathways for players to go through, is the fact that we expect the player to come out at 19 and go into professional cricket or state cricket or whatever as somebody who can compete at that point. And very few leg spinners have got the skills, the experience, or grown into themselves enough to be able to do that. And you've only got to look through the history of the game to realise that even the best of either come into the game slightly later, come into the first class game slightly later, around the age of 23, 24, or they've come in early, they've then dropped off a bit, which is a usual path for a leg spinner, and then picked up later in their career. And most of them follow that path. And often our pathways in our respective countries don't accommodate the fact that they're probably going to make their way in the game a little bit later than, say, some fast bowlers or some batters. The ones that generally come back, and Adil Rashid is a classic example of this. He was on a tour that I was on with England in 2009 as a leg spin bowler. He didn't play on that tour, but he was obviously very talented. Then his bowling went downhill a little bit, but he had his batting to fall back on. And he went away, and he was still getting picked by Yorkshire to be able to bat, could still score quick runs at number 7, number 8, and then bowl a few overs, but not be the bowler that he is now by any stretch of imagination. So his batting probably saved him. And whilst we're talking about leg spinners here, an off spinner that had a similar journey was Graham Swann, in that he had an early rise, came on an England tour very early, then went back into county cricket, and has learnt how to bowl gradually over a period of time. But there were times where his batting was getting him into sides because he could whack it up the top of an order in one-day cricket. So my advice to leg spinners is twofold, really. The first one to a leg spinner is make sure you bat well, because that batting will probably keep you in the game and keep you recognised in the pathway for longer. So it gives you time to then come back and to bowl really well at the age of 23, 24 onwards. And the second thing is for the pathway, so have a really good think about actually how we're going to develop bowlers. And spin bowlers in particular, and leg spinners in particular, because the pathways don't allow for it. We want to make our decisions much too early for a leg spinner and their normal path of development.
And that can be tricky, can't it, Lavers, in terms of motivation for a spinner? How do you keep someone going who's getting a bit fed up with not getting the progress that they want?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it, really? I mean, you've got to be, first of all, reminding them of the big picture and that there is a long-term development aspect to it. So the importance of your performance today or tomorrow maybe isn't of the highest priority, whereas what you achieve when you're into your career, or whether it's as a club cricketer or a school cricketer or a professional cricketer in years to come, is what's going to count for a little bit more. So let's keep our eyes on the prize, and the prize is generally in the distance with the young cricketer rather than the immediate result. So try and remind them of that, and also remind them it is a difficult job, and it's a job that where you've got the responsibility for the whole spin section of the bowling attack. So that there is a great importance in what you can do, and if you slot into a role as a medium pacer, which, without being disrespectful, you're one of a team there. You're one of four or five seamers possibly in the lineup who are going to offer something different to each other, but there's going to be similarities there. So whether it's the requirement of the team that they need the other option, or whether it's the interest that it's going to give you being so influential when you do get it right, there's lots of positives and lots of wins there available for the spinner if they can get to grips with what they're trying to achieve.
And how important as well do you think it is to get conditions that are conducive more to spinners? A lot of cricket, especially now, is played in limited overs format, 20 over stuff, on pitches which are not brilliant for spinners, certainly in the UK. I mean, probably different in other parts of the world, but certainly the one-day aspect, the conditions aspect, is an important one, isn't it?
I think it's that consideration of expectations as well as conditions. And if we are going to produce flat pitches that aren't going to turn, they're going to zip onto the bat, and life's going to be very difficult for the spinners, then we have to be aware of our expectations of them and what we want them to achieve. And sometimes it might be that going under 10 and over is a win. And I know people, because of the probably quite significant shift in run rates that are being achieved in the last 10 years as opposed to previously, then people maybe can't quite get their head around the fact that going at 8 and over is not a bad thing sometimes. But obviously in 2020 that can be a really, really good thing on certain grounds in certain conditions. So that's managing expectations side of it. But obviously we don't want spinners to just turn into guys who are looking to defend, and especially if they're playing in conditions where the seamers are getting some benefit and the spinners are getting nothing, we are going to lose them from the game. So there is a requirement on, whether the requirement is on ground staff to produce those pitches or possibly more governing bodies to recommend that pitches are produced in a certain way, I'm not sure. Gareth will probably have more of a view on that one, I would have thought.
Well, I'm going to go the other way. I think it's a bit of a misnomer that in certain parts of the world pitches won't spin. I think if a pitch is going to seam around, and often we get pitches that do seam around in the northern hemisphere, then if they're going to grip, the ball's going to grip into the pitch for a seamer, then it's got a great chance of being able to do it for a spin bowler as well. And I think often there's a cop-out which says that you're not able to bowl spin in English conditions. I'm not a big fan of that one, and I think that's a limited view that we need to get our heads around, because I think we've got an opportunity to create more positive messages around spinners. You look at early season pitches that are a bit soft, the ball can go into the pitch and stay in the pitch, and by doing that it can turn. And I think it's only when you get to the first class game and when you get really good groundsmen that have lots of time on wickets do we get to the point where pitches probably don't offer that much because they don't offer that much for seamers either. I think it's often more difficult to bowl spin in conditions like England are experiencing at the moment as it is to bowl in normal English conditions or New Zealand conditions around the world. So it's a bit of a cop-out. I'd like to change our language around that because I think we can help people to develop a little bit quicker as a result.
And that's where captaincy has a key role as well, doesn't it? When you are playing for a captain who is not that supportive of spin, it makes it a lot more difficult for the spinner to get overs.
It does, and I think that's where we would need to disturb our thinking a little bit, I would suggest. Whoever's the coach or even a senior player to challenge the captain on that would be really good and see what actually underpins that view. And if his view is, it's because we play on wickets that seam around or we play on wickets that skid on, then that view also needs to be challenged as well, because I would suggest it's one of those traditional myths as opposed to something that's been really analysed and discussed. So yeah, I think we need to, as coaches, and hopefully this show is one of those things which helps people to disturb their thinking and think of things in a clearer light rather than maybe just taking some of those traditional misnomers on board.
I think going back to what Gareth said previously as well, as about the conditions saying they will work for spinners is something that people need to be aware of, because spinners often get categorised into boxes of they're a quick spinner, they fire it through or they toss it up in the air, or they're a certain type of spinner. But that's a bit like saying someone swings the ball or they don't swing the ball, or they swing the ball, they seam the ball, when actually you need a complete rounded set of skills. And if you are in those conditions where you've got to bowl into the pitch a little bit more, then you have to adapt to it, and that's why the guys with adaptability and with a range of skills are going to continue to succeed, whereas guys who say, well, I toss the ball up or well, I fire it in, are going to be limited and a little bit restricted in the success that they're going to have.
Okay, let's finish this section with a yes no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question. Fitness training has little effect on mental toughness.
No.
No.
Second question. Music helps with performance.
No.
No.
Third question. A braced front leg helps spinners.
No.
Yes.
Well, I thought we were going to have all no's there for a minute. Right, let's get into a few questions. These are questions that have been sent in by listeners to the Pitch Vision podcast or readers to the Pitch Vision website. And they've got a burning question that they need to have answered. And they also have the chance to win a prize. And that's an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you're interested in finding out about that, you can send a question in by email using coach@pitchvision.com. The first question is from Osama. And Osama says, I need to know more about how to be a good hitter batsman in 2020 format.
Well, it's something that we're seeing a lot, aren't we, on the television, and we're seeing a lot of 2020 cricket and some brilliant exponents of being able to hit the ball hard and in particular hit the ball longer distances than maybe we'd have been used to seeing in years gone by. So what I would do, Osama, is have a look at each one of them and see what the consistencies are, and what we know about those consistencies is that there are really good bases that sit at the bottom of their shot. So we tend to see a reasonably big gap between their back and the front foot, and that allows them to push some force down into the ground and then receive that force back up through the thing that we call the kinetic chain that we talk about a lot in bowling terms, but it also applies in hitting terms as well. And if we've got that good stable base, then we can generally use that to generate pace into our hands, because that's what ultimately we're looking to achieve, is to get lots of pace into hands and get the bat moving over a distance in a very quick fashion. And those guys that do that are the ones that hit the ball out the ground on a more regular basis than those that don't. The other thing that comes into play is the midpoint, which is the hips. So if you get a decent gap between your feet and the hips rotate properly, so they're square at point of contact, then that means that the bat will come through last and it will come through fast as well. So those are the two main starting points. And then when you get to the top of the system that you're trying to hit the ball with, we've got to get the hands doing something. So you see lots of people taking their hands back a long way, and you see people taking their hands upwards. And what that enables them to do is to move the bat over a longer distance in an accelerated fashion at the end of all of those things happening, from the ground up into the hips, then into the arms and shoulders. If the bat's moving a distance and it's moving fast, then you're likely to get a really good launch off of the bat face to get it to go out of the park. So starting point base, make sure those hips rotate and the hands come through last, making that bat move over a decent distance in an accelerated fashion. If you start doing those things, then you'll see the ball disappear on a more regular basis.
And it's not necessarily about size, is it, Lavers? I mean, it can be that you can have a relatively small batsman who can hit the ball quite a long way. The cliche, of course, is some big guy comes out and you expect him to start smashing it over mid-wicket straight away.
Absolutely. I think strength generally has a correlation with size, but power is very different, and power to size isn't necessarily something that is correlated in the same way. So having that or creating that hand speed and bat speed is ultimately what's going to send the ball travelling over the ropes. So I think people need to be aware of that distinction between being strong and being powerful. And that can then pass over into their training and how they train. And if they do any specific S&C or fitness work, then they can look at their power work and look at how they try and improve that, because there are elements of training which people can do and they think they're working hard, but they could actually be slowing themselves down through the training they're doing. So being aware of how they're going to go about any physical programs is going to be really useful to developing power in the body parts that need it.
Yeah, there is a natural inclination if you're going into the gym to lift up a weight as heavy as you can, but there's a broad spectrum of lighter weights that can be moved more quickly.
Absolutely, yeah, we're looking at guys shifting weights as quick as they can when it comes to the power phase of things. So there'll be a lot of benefit to lifting those heavy weights at certain times of the year and in certain parts of your program, and also certain body parts which will benefit more maybe from use of heavier weights in lower repetitions, even though it might be a slow movement. But there are requirements for strength and there are requirements for power in different movements that we do. So at times lighter weights and different types of weight moves across different planes as well and in different directions. So rotational power as well as just straight line power is a good way to try and improve that. And it doesn't need a weight. It can be done with something. You can do it with your own cricket bat on your own. You can do it with a medicine ball. You can do it with various different things which are going to help you develop that power.
Gareth, in your experience, how quickly does someone take to the method you've been describing, which is very much coming from a baseball background compared to, say, a traditionally coached player who's been told to play in, I don't want to say an old-fashioned way, but in a more traditional style of coaching, you know, playing with a straight bat, all that kind of thing?
Well, I think with going, sort of taking your question apart a bit there, David, I think it's important that we teach both skills, because this is a tool, really, to be able to launch a ball out the park like a de Villiers does and a Butler does, who aren't particularly massive blokes. They're very strong, they're very powerful, but they're not like huge blokes, as you described. What they do is they've got a tool, which is the ability to do it, and it's almost something that they choose to pick out of the bag wherever the situation suits them. And it doesn't have to be at the end of a one-day innings by any stretch of imagination. It could be if they just fancy a bowler in a test match and they want to take him down. It might be a tactical thing to do that. So it's a tool rather than something that you do all of the time, in my opinion. And when I watch the best players in the world practice, they're still doing the things that the traditional things that we've talked about, but then they'll also practice this, so they've got the option of picking out that particular thing at a time where they deem it most appropriate. How quickly do people adapt? The answer is very quickly to it. If they're exposed to it and they do enough of it over a short period of time, then you'll start to see them adopting those movement patterns very, very quickly. the thing about it as well, which is often why people take it on board very quickly, is because it's incredibly good fun to have a go at it and to feel the sensation of a ball going off a bat differently. And also, when they're making mistakes doing it, there's almost an acceptance that mistakes are going to happen in that process of trying to smack it out the ground, so they don't get too down upon themselves. So to me, it's about exposure, because we haven't yet worked with somebody who's not enjoyed the process of trying to hit the ball a long, long way in a fairly safe environment. Then you practice it as much as you can, take it into middle practices, see if it applies and when it applies, and work on the decision making that goes around when you pull that particular tool out of the bag, and away you go. But the journey from start to finish is one of the shorter ones that we'll experience as cricket coaches.
I found one of the barriers to it is the fun side of it in doing it in nets is great, but then the perspective is, well, once I get into the middle, I need to play properly. I've seen that people not say it directly, but that's kind of like the implied thing they do. This is all fun and games, but now I've got to go out and play properly because I've got to score some runs.
But that's a culture thing, isn't it? That's where it comes back to me. It's the culture, it's the, you know, if you're in a match situation and you don't talk about these things at the beginning and you just crack on and somebody does it without it being relevant to that game or whatever, then obviously eyebrows are going to be raised. But if you've got a culture where actually we're going to back you, if you make that decision and it doesn't come off, even if it doesn't fit the game situation, but you've got good rationale for doing it, then I'd almost applaud that as a decision and then say, right, what would you do if you had a go at that again? Culturally, we've got to get it right. There's no point in teaching these kids and these young players the ability to whack the ball out the ground if the first time that they fail doing it in a match context that they're going to get a shoeing. So it's really important that we get the environment, and I know we talk about that a lot in this show, right, so it supports people to make their own decisions, to supports people to make their own failures and mistakes and then to learn from them.
Next question's from Sahan. And Sahan says, I'm an off spinner playing club cricket. I've been bowling for a few years now, but I've found that I'm quite inconsistent with my line and length. My main problem is I drop the ball too short on too many occasions. And when I do manage to land the ball on a good length, it's too straight and ends up turning past the leg stump and being a leg side wide. Are there any techniques that can help prevent me bowling too short and pitch the ball on a good length outside off stump?
Well, what would be great at this stage is if obviously we could have a little look at Sahan bowling and see what he was actually doing. So what we're looking for is an element of repeatability in his action and what he's doing. So if we can get the ball in the same, place six times in a row and then a number of overs in a row, one after the other, there's got to be that repeatability of action. So if he does have access to a camera, the first thing I suggest he do, and he doesn't need to send it into us, but he can do if he wants to, but I'd suggest he just films himself from a couple of different angles and just has a little look at how repeatable his action is, and he can look out for some key elements of his action. So first of all, have a little look at how his feet are landing, so the direction of the or the alignment of those feet and also the length of stride. He could then look at something very simple like his head position at the point of release, and that would be good to see from both the side and from in front or behind. But then obviously then he can look at the position of his arms and the position of his hand when he's releasing the ball as well. So just some simple guidelines there first of all, and he might see straight away that there are some very obvious big changes in the body position, the head position, the arms, etc., etc. So he may be able to identify very quickly what works well when he's bowling a decent ball and what position his body gets into which works well for him. And when the ball is being dragged down, what's happening differently. Now, we could obviously speculate a few different options that could be going on. He could be losing his head position or losing his body position or losing alignment of his feet and as a result losing balance. But if he has a look at a video like that and he just watches maybe 3 or 4 overs of footage that he can put together, then I'm sure he'll get plenty of information which will help him on his pathway back to getting a bit more repeatability.
It's the release point that is always one of the most difficult things, isn't it, Gareth?
Well, it is, but if I was to make a prediction on what this bowling action looked like, which is causing two things, one that lots of spin, but inconsistent length with the ability to drag it down quite regularly. And when you do get it into a relatively good length, it spins down the leg side. I would suggest that, and it is speculative, but I'd suggest that there's a good chance that the front foot is blocking off the ability of a bowler to be able to deliver the ball with high levels of spin into relatively good areas. So I should imagine here we're looking at an off-spinner whose left foot goes across his body and is pointing towards fine leg of a right-handed batter rather than having a better alignment than that. And what tends to happen with these guys is when they drive the ball and bowl the ball over the top of that front leg, because of the angle that they're on, there's a good chance that when they get a lot of revs on the ball and when they get a lot of action on the ball, that they will drag the ball down short. And also then if they start to adjust out of that alignment of the feet, then they get the ball into what they would perceive to be good length, but it would bounce too straight because of the alignment that they've got with their feet and therefore their hips and then ultimately their shoulders as well. So the ball would likely to pitch in an area of off stump, maybe even middle stump, and then spin down the leg side because their alignments are all out. So my starting point with a bowler like that would always be to have some alignment work, to get people understanding that if they get their back foot and their front foot in line or even a little bit open, then it will allow them to generate lots of spin, but also be able to deliver the ball into more penetrative lines. So when it does spin off of the length, then it's going to bring the stumps into play rather than going down the leg side. They'll also find that they'll be working with their body rather than against their body, which will mean that they'll bowl less drag downs. So, yeah, I'm getting a picture from the question because I think it's a fantastic question with lots of good information. But the front foot is blocking off the back foot, and as a result, that is the main root cause of what's going on. Of course, I could be completely wrong. If there was an image sent in, it could be the complete opposite. But that's a general view that I get when I deal with bowlers that have got the similar problem to this one that's been written in by Sahan.
And it's interesting, when you make a correction like that, you can often find that things get worse for a while, don't they?
Any change, isn't it? Any change is uncomfortable, and if it's not uncomfortable, it often means that you haven't changed anything because you're doing what you've always done. So you've got to have that period of difficulty. You've got to be on the edge of awkwardness, really, if you're looking to make a change. And as we know, anything that we move with the feet probably feels like about a 30 degree movement, when in fact is probably a 3 degree movement. So we've got to be patient with it, but equally, if it's not uncomfortable, then there's a good chance that you're not changing it enough. So I think anybody who says to me, "Oh, that feels awkward," that's a fantastic starting point for learning.
It's time for the soapbox. There's a minute on the clock. There's Mark Garraway standing on the metaphorical soapbox. Or maybe the real one, I don't know. I can't see him. But whatever, he's got a minute to talk about what he likes. Garraz, over to you.
I'm used to standing on boxes, just a quick aside, which won't take too long, but the England support staff used to put a Reebok step just in front of the urinal at Lord's, and with a little note on Garraz's wee step, just so I could get up high enough. And going on to the thing that I was wanted to talk about is cause and effect. And I'm working with a bunch of new coaches, relatively new coaches that have come out of the professional game and doing a great job in their environments at the moment. But what I'm finding is that they get instantly drawn into the result. The result being, for example, that somebody's falling over when they're batting, or the result being that their wrist is collapsing. And then they coach the result. So they coach the wrist, right? In order to get your wrist doing what we want to do, I need you to get in that position. But ultimately, the best coaches, and where they will get in time, because they'll get more experience at this, is to actually look around, what is the root cause of that thing happening at the end? So always take it back, and that's where video is brilliant, because we can always review that video to the starting point and then work out at what point does the root cause come along that eventually causes that wrist to go, or the hands to move away from the body and the bat, or whatever the case may be. So go back to root cause as much as you can, rather than treating the symptoms. Let's go and try and get it before it becomes a problem in the first place.
That's the end of the show for this week. We are about to head off, but before we go, we're going to decide on the winner of this week's competition. Of course, it was the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com up for grabs. And we had Simon's question about hitting the ball in 2020. And we had Sahan's question about his inaccurate off-spin. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Two magnificent questions. I'm going to go with Sahan this week because I thought his detail was brilliant. Gave me a really clear picture of what he was being impacted on within his bowling. I may have got it completely wrong, but it did give me a very clear picture in my head. So you're the winner this week.
Thanks, Sahan. It's always good when we're answering these questions. If they resonate with other people, then it might not answer Sahan's question. We don't know, we're guessing. But it might answer someone else's question who's listening. And so it's always helpful. So if someone else was listening and they wanted their question answered directly, how could they send their question in to us, Gareth?
Well, they could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Social media is also available. Our Twitter is at pitchvisionacad. And our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can listen to the show every week by subscribing. We put out a new show every Friday. And if you want to subscribe to that, you can go to your favourite podcast catching app. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you want to go to the website to stream the show or get the RSS feed or find out all the show notes, you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and then clicking on the podcast link. And they have all the details for all the previous shows in there and also more information about how to subscribe if that's what you want to do. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.